So welcome back, everybody. This is our second to last satsang. Next Sunday will be our last, our final. And when I first put this course out, it was focused more on enlightenment, on the experience of enlightenment. I say more because it's kind of progressed into being focused more on rites of passage and the teachings of the medicine wheel. But still, enlightenment is the focus. And one of the reasons it adjusted a little bit was because I was getting a little bit of flack. Like, how dare you sell enlightenment to people? Who are you to bring enlightenment to the people when enlightenment is free? Enlightenment is a right. And this is very true. And it has been interesting to watch this all kind of play out because, in the same breath that one would protest, how dare you bring enlightenment to the people in this way? Is there fear of enlightenment? And this is also true. Because enlightenment is a great, great responsibility. And I dare say that each of you, having come this far through the course, is tapping into their enlightenment. And it is very much the place of the warrior. Because enlightenment is your inheritance, yes? But of course, in order to receive your inheritance, someone close to you must die. We've spoken about death and dying to the self already, and many of you have had very intimate experiences with death in these last weeks. So, bringing this forth as we are coming towards the end of this hero's journey of becoming the journey, of you being the master of your ship, of your relationships, your relationship with yourself, with others, and Creator. We've come past the La La Land. We passed La La Land way back. And we also bypassed the namby-pamby. And we're coming into what is real. And in the Course of Miracles, they say, what is real cannot be threatened. Yet to stand in your enlightenment can feel quite devastating. And perhaps you've all experienced some feelings of isolation, loneliness, not being understood by people around you, different. Like Little Mouse, had a spot, a white spot on his chest and a white spot on his tail, and everybody said, "You are different than us." And if you also remember a frog who sat on the lily pad, the only way you could differentiate the green of the frog from the green of the lily pad was the white spot on his chest. So I will leave it at that for now and just allow, because satsang is a place of exploration, just anybody who would like to speak into this to do so. I will maybe just say that when we also embarked on this journey, we spoke that, you know, this journey is not for the faint-hearted. Yet will it lighten you up? And it will lighten you up. And also, as the medicine people know, you know, we don't take ourselves seriously, but we do take this medicine seriously. We do take being enlightened seriously. So if you can find in yourself that place, that kind of cheeky place, you know, like you can see this kind of grin on my face, that kind of half smile, yeah? Like, okay, here I am in my enlightenment. All right, what am I going to do with it? Where do I go from here?
Well, let's see. The way that I've been experiencing what I think you're addressing is just a lot of space, a lot of like neutral space in time and in the physical, and there has been a loss in it or a kind of death in terms of the self that I have recognized as the one who engages to get things done and to create. It's been like that person's not really there anymore. And there's all this space. And then each thing that I show up for, each relationship, interaction, just comes out really clearly. So it's done. It's like it comes out, like with my singing, that's the easiest example. It just comes out really clearly. And I remember all the words, and I know the tune, and I kind of merge with the tune when it's happening, and I'm totally there, and then it's done. And I'm not thinking about it before, during, or after. And it's just an experience of being in these various structures of my life, these various relationships and plans and so forth. Mm-hmm. So that's the best way I can describe it, as some part of me has died. And I feel a lot of liberation. Liberation is even too emotional. There's not a lot of emotion in this. It's just a lot of space. And so I can see that my attention, as I face the various challenges of my life, or again, challenge is really a dramatic word, the various tasks that are there to be done, I'm just moving forward. It's like I'm not thinking or worrying or putting much attention on these tasks. I'm simply doing what's there, the next thing to do. And it all seems to be working out really gracefully. So partly I have these little moments where I'm like, maybe this is enlightenment. It's like, is this okay? Like, this is really cool. Is this legal?
Beautiful.
So those are my best words at this time.
Beautiful, beautiful. Yeah, we'll be exploring in these next lessons what you've just tapped into, which would best be called existence. Because existence is the realm of nothing. Existence has no quality and no quantity. Existence ensures that no one is superior and no one inferior. That a blade of grass is equal to a star. Now, if existence were to explode, like Fukushima, it would eradicate life. And so as each of you has been given the right of keeping the soul, which is only the first right given to us by White Buffalo Woman in regards to the sacred pipe, which you are the Chanupa, with every breath you take. So in these next lessons, you will understand more about this nature of existence that must be contained. And as the keeper of the soul, you become that container. The soul contains existence and convinces existence to come into union with life. Life is blah, 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 all over the place. Everything, la, 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 everything, everything. Existence is nothing. Life is everything. For those two to come into what is called the mystical union. But it is very important that existence be contained, just as nuclear energy is contained. And we can see how devastating it is when it leaks. And beyond leaking, you know, goes off. We've already seen that with Chernobyl. So, you know, all of life is a metaphor for enlightenment. Every single bit of it from Buddha, as I wrote to you in that last email, you are asleep or enlightenment is the Buddha asleep under the tree. You are the deer. And it is said that the Buddha under the Bodhi tree was awakened by the deer. His enlightenment was awakened by the deer. So to approach your enlightenment in this way and be in it, as you spoke as well, and be fascinated by it, because fascination, the root of that word is fascia, which is connective tissue, which is what holds you together. That's what holds the whole thing together. Now, you also spoke of emotions beautifully. When you understand that you have been given the right for keeping the soul, your emotions are freed up. Where emotions used to control, they now go on patrol. They patrol the perimeter of soul, the interior, and they are continually checking for leaks, tears, and invasions in your container that is soul. And yes, challenge becomes a dramatic word. Beautiful. And what was the other one you said?
Liberation.
Even liberation sounds, whoa. You know, and indeed, you know, my the dear one, Muji, if anybody ever watches him, you know, he says, forget about enlightenment. Eventually, you forget about enlightenment, just as a fish doesn't know they're in water. A fish doesn't know what water is. We are the fish. We are the fish that came out of the water onto dry land to know ourselves. And we will return to that from which we came. The womb of existence. But as the toroid sphere does its thing, existence comes inside of us, and we become the keepers of existence, so that existence can power life, just as nuclear energy works. Existence becomes the fission, the nucleus of life, because life is dying. We see that, yes? And the only way for life to carry on is to embody existence, which until this time has been kind of out there. And the nature of existence is called the void, which we will go into in quite a lot of detail in these next lessons. And the void is governed by what's called humoral medicine, where there is only hot and cold, wet and dry. The Chinese use this, the Huicholi use this, the Torah speaks of this. All of the teachers who have come before us speak of this. But right now, many people are in the void, which is generally making a living, going to work, coming home, caring for your children, caring for yourself, going to work, coming home, caring for your children, caring for yourself. Kind of like going and getting wet and then coming home and drying out. Going and getting wet, coming home and drying out. You know, and those are extremes, right? And as we've spoken before, the nature of this earth, we call earth, okay, by the way, this is not the only earth there is. All earths are birthed in the womb of existence. So also, if we want to be isolated on this planet, which we already have been, you know, that's kind of the way it's going. But if we can embody existence, there's the possibility of more Earths being created and life carrying on. So when you understand the void and we embody it, this Earth will come back to its temperate nature, its lukewarm state. You know, we talked about that with Luke Skywalker, right? When he was going into the trash compactor, everybody thought there was only two options. He was going to live or he was going to die. And somewhere along the line, he reappeared. And everybody went, huh? How is that possible? How is that so? No, we saw him get munched. There's no way. But, you know, it's a movie, right? They can do anything they want. I love the way he said, is this legal? So, I mean, that was quite a drop. So I'm just going to leave that now and see where that drops in for each of you or any of you. You don't all need to speak, only if you feel drawn towards making a sound.
Today, as I was talking to my mother, I was faced with like my biggest fear and my biggest hurt with my mother and communicating. And as I'm stepping into my path, it's just what's staring me right in the face when I talk to her is her deep untrust and like her deep trust in the going out to get wet, coming home, ringing, that sort of thing. It was really, I have a lot of love for her. Same time, it's like, how can I be her child at the same time? So, yeah, a short conversation, but that was coming up for me.
A short conversation, but enough to get what you got, yeah?
Yeah.
Beautiful. Yeah, again, in this next lesson, we're going to be speaking about, you know, my daughter actually had said this to me once. It's really hard to love someone you hate. And the truth is, in each of us, we hate our parents for something they did. We hate our partners. We hate ourselves. And most of all, we hate life for dealing us the cards that it did. Hatred is the missing link. And in these next lessons, you will be asked to face this and bring it forth and really bring it out into the open. And the first one, the only one really, is our hatred for life itself. Because if we can pop that bubble, so to speak, everything else will flow. You know, you can go through like psychotherapy and progressive, you know, forgive this person and forgive that person and forgive yourself and everything else. But you know what? Creator already gave a blanket forgiveness. You, he, she, they have been, were forgiven. Bless you. Yes, that's what the ancestors, the elders tell us. You've already been forgiven, and we talked about that in the last lesson. So, you know, Ho'oponopono, it is a much bigger thing than people understand anyway, the kahuna teaching of Ho'oponopono, which I like to call hope, oh nope, oh no. You know, oh my God, I hope this isn't coming to me. Oh my God, it is. Oh no, here we go. So, you know, like going in, I was talking to somebody today about just about things and, you know, really, I'm not afraid to go for the jugular. And that really rubs some people the wrong way. But obviously you're all here because you also have that in you. And going in to address your disdain, we could call it, for life, for dealing you the cards that it did, will pull the plug on all the self-sabotage you do, all the relationships you sabotage, all the opportunities for growth, financial gain, all those sabotages are based on your hatred for life itself. And that is what I mean by going for the jugular. You can dance around it and, you know, like I say, one at a time, pick off the people you feel like you need to forgive or forgive yourself. But when you go right in, you know, just get close, close, close. Start in close, as they say. Start in close. And, you know, disengage that ticking bomb. Diffuse it. Diffuse isn't even a good enough word. I can't think of what the word is when you disable a bomb. There's a particular word. But it's just to completely disable it. You know, disconnect those wires. Your brain is a series of wires. And this next lesson indeed is called the electric potato. The potato brain. The potato brain is different, very different from the mind. But it can so easily displace the mind. In fact, I just heard a beautiful piece today. The heart can choke the mind as all the blood flows back to itself. And therein is that piece about emotions. You know, when our emotions are flooding us, it cuts the heart off from the mind. The mind. Not the brain. And as we have said, the word ceremony means to come into one mind. And that is the mind that we speak of. Some people call it the God self, source. It is the one mind. So life, in fact, becomes ceremony. There is no differentiation between sitting in ceremony and living life. So bringing some light in, you know, in Qigong, we always say where there is pain or discomfort, shine a flashlight on it. End the suspense.
In the last month and through some experiences I've had, I have had feeling of being out shaped parts and sort of like that.
I'm just gonna, you're breaking up a little bit. Can you make sure all the windows on your screen are closed? I'm not sure if it's the weather, but it's just a little hard to hear you. And I want to be able to hear you.
Okay, I closed everything now. Can you hear me better?
A little bit, yeah. We'll just listen hard. Okay.
So I had some moments of feeling like I had been given really shitty cards, like how you were saying, dealt shitty cards, and feeling like a hatred of life almost seeping in. And in my experience of that, there was a part of me that was even more determined to really like suck all the juice out of what I was experiencing. Like, okay, if I'm going to go through this really shitty thing, I'm going to learn as much as I can from it and grow as much as I can from it. And so I've really been noticing that experience.
Beautiful. Mm-hmm. You've heard I speak before about the hummingbird, yes? How the hummingbird sucks the joy out of every moment. And in that way, that is the joy that feeds the bliss of innocence, which we've distinguished in the last lessons. There is the bliss of ignorance and the bliss of innocence. And so what you've done, you know, it's so beautiful that you've been able to do that. No matter what life deals you, you've been able to, how did you put it exactly?
Suck the juice.
You suck the juice, yes, beautiful. Yeah, suck the juice out of it. And that is how we feed ourselves. You know, in the story of First Mother and First Father, they talk about how the children were starving. And the same in the story of White Buffalo Woman, there was very little to eat. Before the Lakota had horses, here we are in the year of the horse, upon which to hunt the buffalo, which is the symbol of wisdom, there was very little to eat. They're not talking about broccoli. They're talking about what you fed yourself. The juice of your experiences, no matter what they look like. Just beautiful. Yum, 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 yum. Good work. Good work. Wow.
There's been a heightened awareness of the subtle for me. It is kind of like watching myself with fascination and my interaction with life and life around me as well. I guess a sense of curiosity has been creeping in, and I've been able to notice the really subtle shifts in energy far more than I used to. My tendency used to be to go from one extreme to the other. And now, if I can feel myself just slightly going off my path, it's like I can gently nudge myself back. I might go a little bit the other way sometimes, but I can watch it happen as it's happening, and I can just gently nudge myself back again. So I keep myself going pretty steadily. And there really aren't a lot of extremes. The word like challenge and liberation, to me too, that feels like kind of intense almost. My reality is not like that so much anymore, at least at this point.
Yeah.
And who knows what life will decide to dish out next, but.
Well, you know what? It doesn't matter now.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter what life dishes out, because you got it.
Yeah.
You are in your response ability.
Yeah.
You are able to respond on your own.
Yeah.
And you are not alone. You're not alone. You're, you know, it's always good to get some body work and, you know, join a group like this for support. Yes. But essentially, you know, your default now is, I can do this. There will be times I will need help, but the default is, I can do this. I am independent and I am autonomous. Yeah. That's what it means to be independent and autonomous. And so you are, we are all in the void in a way, yes? Alex Gray has one of his beautiful paintings. In fact, this painting of his is probably the least beautiful because it's mostly black. You know, Alex Gray stuff is like, wah, in your face, right? Well, this one's just black. And on one side, there's flames, and on one side, there's water. And above, there's this little shiny object, which is your awareness. And one must go fishing in the void to reach that awareness, enlightenment, kind of the same thing. But again, as Muji and many Zen masters and masters of all kinds say, never mind the shiny object. Forget about enlightenment. And as my father said to me, In a journey I took and met him, you know, just look at the light. And in fact, it was ayahuasca herself who first said that to me. I saw a shiny object and I was focusing on it. And then she said, just look at the light. And there was like this blinder that blocked the actual shiny object. And all I could see was the light rays coming from it. So never mind enlightenment now. Just look at the light of the flashlight. Right? That shines upon the pains and discomforts as to end the suspense.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, the thought of looking at enlightenment to me again is almost as if I would still be in that state of looking to something to attain in the future, where I don't really experience things like that so much. It continues to come back to the present moment.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all I just want to be here,
mm-hmm,
in the present moment. And whatever is put on my plate in this moment is what I work with,
mm-hmm,
right now.
Mm-hmm.
And along with that, I think because of that, it's become easier for me to maybe hold a vision for what I want to create, but I'm more disciplined. I can contain myself more to continue doing what I need to do just in this moment. So I don't feel like I'm trying to get anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like I'm in it.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if you could call that enlightenment yet or
Why
no.
not? It's
I
legal.
guess so. I guess to me, it just doesn't matter. You know? Because this is where I am and I just want to live life. I don't want to think about what to call it. I just want to be it.
Yes, and you are being it. And in a way, there is, there is value in, one of those Sarah McLachlan songs, she said, "They will not let you be so proud." Be proud of your enlightenment. Proud means to stick out. And I did that when I started this course, and I got shot down. That happens. And it will happen. That's why, an enlightened person, it has to be a warrior. But a warrior like Arjuna. Arjuna did not want to fight. He did not want to go in there and fight, but Krishna said, "You must." So, Muhammad Ali said too, when you reach enlightenment, you float like a butterfly and sting like a bee. So, and I mean, there's a whole bunch there behind the bees, like, the shamanistic aspect of bees as well is huge. So all of what you've said, and in the same way that, I kind of asked you all to walk your talk last week and invite other people into the course, walk your enlightenment. Doesn't mean spouting off about it, of course. No. Like I tell people, don't beat people over the head with ayahuasca. Just let them come with it, come to it, And know that you are. Know that you have reached enlightenment. That is part of knowing thyself. You will know the hatred in you, and you will know the enlightenment in you. You will know everything about yourself. That is what it means to know thyself. Know that relationship you have with your mother, with your partner. And what I mean by know is, and it's funny, you spoke of this too. You don't know that you don't know. And still, there's this acknowledgement of, the reason I am the way I am is because I am. That's kind of how knowledge goes. Doesn't have answers, like you were saying, yeah? It doesn't need to fit things in boxes, yet it is helpful to guide, period. Whether you're guiding yourself or guiding others, because it's a continuum. We've only received what everything we're speaking about here, everything that Buddhism speaks about, Zen, Taoism, Bhagavad Gita, you name it, is about the first right of seven. We have been given the first right of the rites of passage, which is the right of keeping the soul. There are six more to come. Can you fathom that? Now, who knows? The next six will be like playing jacks, just bounce a ball and pick it up. We don't know. We do not know. But if we can get through this one, it's kind of like when you got through the first four or five steps of this course, the rest just comes. It just comes. You get through that first 45 minutes, an hour of an ayahuasca ceremony. The rest just comes. And it comes in all different kinds of ways. Beautiful. Really, really lovely. So we're coming to a place where we're no longer doing damage control. You know, most of our lives has been damage control. Now we're becoming innovative, diplomatic. And it's said too that when we're talking about the void, so the void is basically hot and dry on one side and wet and cold on the other. And one learns to navigate the void, as you spoke of, where we, I'm trying to remember your words exactly there, we moderate, you had some other way of saying it there. There's a calmness, a centeredness. Yeah. The middle, you know, you can stay in the, oh yeah. And you said, so when I go too far off to one side, I can right myself. And I go too far off to the other side. I get it. I feel it without becoming soaked, drowning, or burned. So no burnout, no drowning. You can walk the middle path. And that's exactly it. And you walk that path because of the light of that enlightenment above you. The shiny object is casting the light so you can see where you're going. But if you'd haven't acknowledged, as I said, that enlightenment exists, there you go, you see it exists, it's kind of hard to see the light. Yeah, so that's the importance of acknowledgement there, of, you know, even being the witness of it. Again, that image by Alex Gray is very good to view as a visual aid. You know, it's completely a black, it's pretty much black, but you couldn't see light if you were in the light, yeah? Like a fish in water kind of thing. So, you know, that's why the ocean is dark. And the light penetrates through the ocean, beautiful beams. You know, I saw it the other day here, we had the snow. And I went out for a morning walk and the sun was right behind the trees and the trees were thicker because they were filled with snow. And there was that beautiful beam of light, you know, that star of light coming through, super diffused. And that is one of my favorite things, I must say. I love looking down into the ocean when I'm on a boat. And if you catch the angle just right, you'll see the same thing. The sun splays itself in the water. That is one of my favorite things. My other favorite thing is watching the light bounce off the water up into the trees or a wall, anything. And you get all those beautiful dappled light, you know? And especially when you see it on a tree as opposed to like a wall. Wall's beautiful too, but when you see it on the tree, it's like the tree is so alive. It's dancing, you know? Just dancing with that dappled light. Yeah.
Yeah, I guess for me, perhaps if there's any avoidance in acknowledging enlightenment, there's a real desire to not stick it in a box or assume what enlightenment is. I guess, but more a thing to be experienced with so much more to it than the immediate experience of it.
Yeah. Well, that's perfect, because we don't want to put enlightenment in a box. Enlightenment does not want to be in a box. No. You know, it wants to stand out. It wants to be seen.
Yeah.
Yes. And seen like the light.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Now, there's not really no pinning enlightenment down. That's kind of the beauty of it. You know, enlightenment and diversity walk hand in hand. And in fact, enlightenment brings about diversity. you know, some of you have already spoken, it breaks you out of your shackles with social conditioning, familial conditioning, community conditioning, which is something we want to talk about a little bit more too. Your ideals, your needs. And again, we're going to talk even more as we go along this last week of the course about needs. We talked about how the pyramid of need has basically been hijacked. and that means needs as you know it, the same as time as we know it, is gone pretty much already. It's just the residues that are still here. So needs become the needs of the planet, not the personal. You know, as Don Miguel Ruiz, the Four Agreements, you know, do not take anything personal. That's one of the things he's talking about. It doesn't just mean somebody says something to you, don't get all whiny about it. He's saying needs are no longer personal. They're planetary. They're called universal needs, yeah? Even Maslow's hierarchy is called universal needs. And there's a kind of arrogance to that. And what they're talking about is the needs of the universe, the needs of the universe to feel safe, the need of the universe to self-actualize. Everything is coming to know itself, which is so handy, because when you're lost in space and space doesn't know itself, good luck. You know, and that's kind of the value of things do have labels. Things do are that's the art of differentiation again, right? A floor is a floor, a blanket is a blanket. The void is the void, life is life, existence is existence, etc., etc. And again, that's laid out in the next lesson. Oh, yeah, something that, the thing about community I wanted to come back to. So, you know, Ayurveda is all about community and building community, and community is so great. Community is important, as is family. I mean, you wouldn't be here today if your family didn't put up with you and get you here, basically. You know, I mean, a new person comes in, a whole new being comes into a set pattern, and they have to adapt to you, and they have to make space for you. That's a pretty big deal. And accept you as you are. So, you know, community as well, in the same way that, you know, it said that choice is cut off by social conditioning, family conditioning, and community conditioning. So when we immerse ourselves in a community of any kind, whether it be the one you live in or a certain kind of focus, even this is a community right now, it carries certain values, which I think you were alluding to there about didn't want to assign values to enlightenment, yeah, or quantity or quality, which is the nature of existence. No quality, no quantity. Everything is the same. But community does that. You know, whether it's a dance community or, you know, you name it, anything. It seems all free and open and liberated, but it has values. It has qualifications and a kind of quantity. So it's just something to be aware of. A community is really no different than social conditioning. They are really one and the same. I mean, people tend to think of social conditioning as sort of a larger sphere of nation or culture. The community, is a reductionism there that actually is has more of a bite than the larger sphere. So there's just something to be aware of, because community can eat you up. Community likes to feed upon itself. The word immunity, it's also part of immune. It's part also part of ammunition. Muni, M-U-N-I. It's a bigger thing than most people understand. So especially these days where so many are scrambling to find their community, build community. Believe me, I've been there. I've built 3 communities and been kicked out of all of them. Thankfully. Spit me right out. And, you know, you're a community of one. As Baba Hari Das says, within you there are 10 beings. You must consult each of them before making any decisions, as to not put yourself in a corner. And that, therefore, is called conscious decision making. And those 10 beings are highly intelligent. Maybe you've seen them sometimes. They're those tall ones. They are in you. And, you know, in a sense, they are your judge. But the really cool thing, if you've ever been to court, is the witness outranks the judge. Yeah? The judge cannot make a call without a witness in some cases, where a witness is there. So that's the power of you also being the witness. Not that you're going to override your counsel, but that you work together. You come into your, what I call, a council of we, and you come in as the witness, and they are the judges, and you work together. You tell them what you have seen, just as the brave warrior ran after he met White Buffalo Woman, and she said, go back to Chief Standing Hollow Horn and tell him all that you have seen. You go back into your council of we on a regular basis, normally when you're sleeping, and your dreams basically inform them what you have seen. They don't make a lot of sense to you, but they understand them. And it helps them to give you your walking papers for the next day, which are delivered to you by spirit. Spirit goes out at night and comes back with the appropriate medicine for you in the morning. And when you are aware of this, you are aware. You are awake. When you understand what things are, how they work, what they are for, the incredible, incredible system of cooperation that is going on from every cell in your body cooperating for you to be able to walk and talk and breathe and eat, to the many realms that the Buddhists have mapped out, the states, you might call them, of the void existence, etc. Again, it's hard to label these things. It's just like, you know, would I call a cup a different thing from a pen? You know, is it a realm? Is it a state? Is it a blah, blah, whatever, right? No, just it's a cup and a pen. There's the void, and there's like the realm of the hungry ghosts. So they just are what they are. But to become familiar with them, get to know them, because they're all parts of you. And this is how you come to know thyself. So we've already come to our hour. Seems to have gone very quick tonight. If there's anything else that would like to be spoken, no, we're good. All right. Very good.